What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, live from my fiance's mom's home. I'm Nick Pollock, and today we have Eno Saris coming in to talk about rookie pitchers to target. That is, these are the guys that are these new names. We want to really check in on some ones that we maybe have talked about in the past and some brand new ones that maybe even had an MLB debut last night, and talk about them for the next 2 weeks, but also what is their impact for 2026? How do we feel about them entering the offseason very shortly? And so, Eno, I give you a massive list, and I'm realizing now I completely forgot about some Pittsburgh team as well, but you told me before this, and I think everybody would love to hear this, you spent an hour doing prep work just on the list of pitchers I gave you. Is that right?
Yeah, and my idea was to find comps for each of these players. And so I've got through most of the list. And I guess the preface that I would give you is that there are no perfect comps, and that, guys can learn their way out of a comp and add a pitch or whatever it is. But I think these are intriguing names, and I think it gives you a sense of who these guys can be. And sure. I think it's based on sound evidence, because basically my process was take the arm angle. And then I was talking to Dan Brooks at Saber Seminar. He calls it the pitching peanut. Okay. Nobody else does. But you can kind of see the movement around the arm slot. It's like looking at the pitcher movements on Savant. The peanut is like the fastball and the sinker, the fastball and the cutter and the sinker around the top, and then around the bottom the curve on
that's
change,
pretty fun. I totally love that
around the arm angle, right? You can kind of think of it as a peanut, you know.
Well, actually, what's funny is I would look up prospects on Savant, and if you know me, especially like a couple of years ago, I knew nothing about prospects, so I'm literally experiencing the first time, and the first thing I would see would be their strike zone plot. And I would be able to see just their arm angle through like the diagonal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
He's
definitely a lefty. Yep. Okay.
I'm actually starting to be able to like look at a plot and be like, oh, I know some comps right off the top of my head. I mean, it's easier than others. I mean,
yeah,
we'll get to, kind of Sproat and McClain and them. There's like a whole tree of kind of like lower slot, sinker sweeper guys,
right.
And you can they just pop off the page because they look very similar. Michael King, Clark Schmidt, Will Warren. We've talked about these guys a million times. There are little wrinkles that make them different, but they pop off the page. But, using that as my jumping off point, I was able to find some names some will make you chuckle.
Oh, I cannot wait. And I'm really also looking forward to making a comp that, we are on the same page about who I'm comping to who.
Yeah.
I think it was something ridiculous of like Brandon Woodruff I was doing a comp for, but you thought I was doing Stephen Kolek, and I was like, oh boy, this is totally different. but actually one that comes to my mind that I'm not going to put on the spot for you right now. I just want to mention with the pitch movement plots, Hurston Waldrep, rookie this year. And I remember looking at his, I think it was against Coors or maybe it was somewhere else, but Coors generally is like a black hole 400, right? Oh, so think of like all the pitches
everything
going
towards
out, like, away from it, right? It just takes them closer. So Hurston Waldrep's pitch plot, I think, is the most condensed, just buddy-buddy, neighboring like commune or something.
Everything's just like all hanging kind out. Of 0-0.
Everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know if actually, like, I'm thinking off the top of my head, if there really is anyone else I've seen with such a variety of pitches that are all just the same.
Not that different.
Just like, right? It really blows me away. I'm like, it makes me so just nervous about Waldrep and the reliance on that splitter personally. I don't know if you have any large take on Waldrep that's very different than that. Otherwise, I'd love to hear your
you see a start where he didn't strike out a single batter.
Yeah.
That always kind of gets your eye. In today's game, you kind of need to strike guys out. I think knowing his story too, that he came up thinking he could throw the four seam by people, I mean, there's some similarities there to like a Brandon Woodruff where, you know, or Corbin Burns, that, you know, actually more Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns came up and thought, you know, I'm going to throw this four-seam by people. And then it got smashed. He went back down. He came back up, you know, cutter, sinker, change basically. So actually, you know, some Corbin Burns in there, but worse.
Oh yeah. Okay. Great. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, because it's the cutters is, you know, the cutter and the sinker are his best fastballs. He doesn't even really throw the four seam anymore.
Right.
And the splitter is like Corbin's change. So, but you can't say Hurston Waldrop's, you know, 93 mile an hour cutter is really that much similar to Corbin Burns. So it's why there's no perfect comp, but there's a little bit of a similar story there.
I mean, hold on a second. There are absolutely perfect comps. We've seen every single southpaw lefty there is. Okay, we've seen them over and over.
Oh, actually, I may have a perfect comp today.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell me, who is that perfect comp for you, and why is it someone to Matthew Boyd?
Oh no, it's Mitch Ferris to his teammate.
His teammate, okay, on the Angels. Oh, Tyler Anderson.
Yeah.
Does Mitch Ferris have a cutter though?
Not yet, but like,
yeah, that's a good point. Not yet, right?
it's a poor fastball, a really good changeup, pretty good command. Mm-hmm. You know, he's gonna have, you know, stretches where he gets his face caved in, and then he'll have, you know, I think he'll actually have stretches where he's all right. You know, it's just just deciding which ones those will be as annoying as it has been to chase Tyler Anderson around, I think.
Oh man, yeah, Tyler Anderson. I mean, that changeup has always been so good, and I think the games where he does well is when the four seamer doesn't leak too much down. It has a decent amount of vert, but then again, the arm angle does speak to that vert a lot. And when he's able to get the cutter inside to those righties too, and just really live with the changeup, that's cool. But Mitch Ferris, I mean, it's 90 miles per hour. The slider that he throws to lefties is not really inspiring at all. And it's just about, please have enough pitch separation and lean into a really good changeup. But it's just such a necessity, a small margin of error, right? A necessity for him to locate that changeup. And it's like, you can't do this. I mean, it's kind of like what you were talking about with Bailey Ober a little bit at the beginning of the year, being like, he throws 90 and I don't want to rely on someone that throws 90 throughout a season. So I think about that a lot with Mitch Ferris.
So
the other guys before, there's actually I give you a whole list really, and there were I think three guys on one team. The first one, it's Peyton Tolley, Connolly Early, which is the most baseball name I've ever heard, because I mean, come on, there's no other sport like with Connolly Early. Like, that's not, I told my fiance, she's like, that's not a name. I'm like, okay, hold on. that's one name in a noun. I don't know. and then you have Kyle Harrison, of course, also going today. I'm sure you did some dingy on this. And of course, you were impressed with Connolly yesterday. I'm here curious to hear your thoughts about him. We'll start with Connolly just after that start last night.
Yeah, with Connolly Early, you know, you've got, we don't have the arm slot information yet, but I took some videos and looked at them. I kind of compared him to Peyton Tolley, who we have arm slot information for. And, you know, I think Connolly Early is a little bit higher arm slot than Peyton Tolley. And, you know, so I was kind of, you know, searching around, and this one's going to sound, I don't know, like mean or something, maybe. But my comp, well, it depends on how you feel about this other guy. My comp for him is David Peterson, but I have to point out that obviously Connolly Early sat 94, you know, and David Peterson sits 91. But Connolly Early had 7 feet of extension. David Peterson has seven foot two. David Peterson's a 41 degree arm angle. So Peyton Tolley's like 33, 34. And so I'm thinking Tolley is higher than that. And if you look at their pitch type movements, you get for David Peterson a four seam, sinker, change, slider, curve. And you get a lot of the same pitches for Connolly Early in a lot of the same places on the pitch breakdown. So that sounds like damning with fate praise. But if you gave David Peterson 3 miles an hour, I mean, he's already pretty good, right? So if you gave David Peterson an extra 3 miles an hour, he'd be pretty damn good. And and we also don't know what the command looks like for Connelly Early versus David Peterson. David Peterson has struggled with his commanded type. And then Connelly Early, you know, he had a 35-45 future command grade from Fangraphs. But he looked pretty in command in that game. Although I watched a lot of the, there were some fastball waste misses for mm-hmm. Early.
Yeah, sure.
Were, it wasn't the best fastball command. So I actually, now that I'm talking about it a little bit more, I think David Peterson is a pretty good comp.
Yeah, nice. David Peterson, yeah, I really like that. Text. And I'm happy that you endured me just completely getting terrible service out here in this place. But I apologize for any moment that I break up a little bit. But actually, one that I had that is a little different, but it's more just of the mix itself. And we've seen this before. It's kind of like your Cade Povich and your Max Fried type of just, all right, there are a lot of offerings in here. There's some exceptional qualities. There are not as some of you are like, okay, maybe not really going to be a major thing. But I do like the aspect here of, I mean, David Peterson, first and foremost, fantastic. Fantastic combo that with the extension as well and the variety of pitches. Also,
I thought the Connelly Early changeup was really nice.
So good. And what I was really impressed with, I didn't expect him to be so good at getting his breaking balls down and into right-handers. Because what I'd seen in the minors in the three starts I saw is that he actually had two different movement plots for his curveball. And I was really confused at first. I thought maybe there was like a
sweeper in the curve.
Well, kind of. It was one is more like 12-6 and the other is more two plane. And what I found out,
it's like he settled on the two plane.
Those are the ones that he would open too quickly and they would fly out and he wouldn't be able to get the full extension down or the extension side. Right. As I believe, well, who was it? Mitch Keller would call it, or essentially far out down and away. Right. And that would make it have, of course, more movement, a better, you know, just more behind it essentially, which then would create more of that two plane. Right. So that makes all the
sense. Maybe he found some sort of cue or something right. that he can keep in mind, because I don't see it in his major league profile.
Exactly. He didn't have it. I think maybe he had one curve that was a little worse than he wanted it to be. But I was incredibly impressed from Connelly Early in this. And yeah, there are little tweaks to make. You know, sinkers should get a little bit more inside to left-handers. And as you mentioned with the four-seamer, yeah, that was a little bit too much over the plate. I think he got away with a little bit there, but he surprised guys with it. He had some really nice ones where he froze guys.
I wondered if that's going to continue, or if that was just people seeing him for the first time, or what that was. But there were definitely some even called strike threes down the heart of the plate. So
right,
I was a little surprised by that.
But the wide arsenal is kind of what I expressed with it, or like, sorry, as I translated that, because okay, maybe they're keying in on that being the slider that comes down or the changeup instead, or just they don't know what to expect yet because there isn't a book, right? So I am curious how that develops, absolutely. And comparing him to Peyton Tolley, I loved watching Peyton Tolley pitch, especially even in Arizona where it was not good. His secondaries, unlike Early, were not consistent at all. And it was a game of just fastball, 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 which weren't well located. And it kind of
yanked the cutters a little bit. Right. Kind of more slidery cutters. He was yanking them down.
Yeah. But the four-seamer, man, there's some times where you can just tell by the eye test that, you know, you see the pitch and you look at the velocity, you go, no, there's something else here. Because that pitch had such a hop to it. And it's because he has 7.5 feet of extension. Like, it's remarkable. And on one hand, I feel, okay, totally with this amazing foundation of a four-seamer that is better than Early's, I want to lean into. At the same time, Early showing up with a variety of pitches, not having low velocity, having above average command out of the gate, seems pretty safe as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird though, because Peyton Tolley had 45 present, 60 future command, and had lower walk rates in the minors, and had a harder time in his debut. So I also want to put together a little bit of psychology here. I don't usually do this, but like, Peyton Tolley is stomping around the mound, you know, And so I wouldn't be surprised if the adrenaline actually got to him a little bit more. It was good mound presence. I'm not saying that he was nervous. I'm just saying that he was fueled by adrenaline. Whereas Early looked a little bit more composed, maybe, or just wasn't as like high wire act. So maybe I'm relying on some scouting grades here. I'm relying on some minor league walk rates, because the Early location numbers were not good for Tolley. They were good for Early, but I wouldn't be surprised if this flipped around a little bit, because in particular, when it comes to fastball command, I thought Tolley had better fastball command.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And actually, it doesn't surprise me a little bit that the walk rate would come up in the majors for Tolley, because being so reliant on a four seamer in the majors, guys can foul those off instead of whiffing them. So, and that's what we saw against Arizona, was that those pitches that in the minors, he would just get those strikes and he would, okay, fine, I'm getting two balls an hour. Fine, I'll just throw fastballs by him and I'll get through this, right? Three ball doesn't matter. He's not going to hit this. But Arizona, well, you have to throw something else because, yeah, we'll be ready for this one. We'll just key in on that. And then, you know, we don't really worry about anything else. Sure, they might not be hitting it over the wall, but they won't be whiffing on it. And that is a huge difference that creates a ton of walks, creates inefficiency, right? While when you have the varied arsenal, that's more about execution of your own pitches, and you'll get those results if you do execute, while with Tolley, you can't have that same exit strategy that you've had in the minors, right? That's a little bit of what I thought about it with it. At the same time, yeah, adrenaline, you never really know. It's early in the year, like, what are you going to get? You know, it's why we generally don't start guys in MLB debuts. Who would you prefer in 2026, Payne Tolley or Connelly Early?
Tolley.
Why is that?
I'm a stuffist. I think this is really nasty stuff. One thing that strikes me is that if you go to Payton Tolley's, Savant thing, and you click on the arm angle, you get a 33 degree arm angle. The arm angle points to nowhere on his pitch plot map. Like what you were talking about when you're like looking at pitch movements and you think you can see the arm angle, you would, if you did not know his arm angle, you would say that Payton Tolley has like a 45 degree arm angle or higher. And then you put this 33 degree arm angle on there and you're like, is going on? He looks like a guy who's over the top in his pitch movement profile, and he's from the side. So this is really surprising stuff for people, and maybe it has some effect on his command, but I'm going to go back on those command grades and his minor league walk rates and think he can figure it out. I did struggle with finding a comp for this because it's such surprising movement. There's some commonalities with Garrett Crochet and Yusei Kikuchi, but it's not the same. And in fact, right now, I want to stay on subject, but I needed to go look for something real quick, which is,
yeah, that, well, I'll give you something about that arm angle quickly.
Yeah.
I just actually went into my head of like, all right, maybe having 7.6 feet of extension speaks to that, of being able to generate this weird movement versus the arm angle. So I went to the next other lefty I can think of that has such extreme extension, my boy Joey Cantillo, and who has a 54 degree arm angle. What if I told you that he has less cut action than Tolley?
That's crazy.
At 33, right?
Yeah.
That really is absolutely bonkers. So if you're thinking about Tolley throwing this to right-handers, that's coming in at them, and also having the same vert as Cantillo's four seamer is just, whoa, hold on a second.
So this is what I wanted to find. So
yeah,
Payton Tolley has 3+ inches of movement over dead zone.
Unbelievable.
It's top 15 already in baseball.
Yeah.
So if we use that as the comp, that's another thing about comps is like, what are we going to use as comps? You've already heard us use a couple of different things. Do we use the pitch mix as a comp? Do we use, you know, even like mound presence, you know, extension? Yeah, sure. What do we use? You know, I've been using arm angle. But if we use this, let me just give you some names around him. Mason Miller has 3 inches. David Bednar I don't want to say that it's all good news. There's a Reed Detmers down here, but Reed Detmers fastball is not his problem, I think.
Look, Reed Detmers, when he actually executed what he tried to do, is really good.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
He's right there with Trevor McGill, Jacob Mizorowski, Hunter Green. So it's mostly good news, everyone around him. So what you're saying, what I'm saying is he has a great fastball. And he has a very surprising grouping of movements. And so that's why I'm gonna bet on him. And you know, we did not find the perfect comp for him. A lefty Hunter Green, maybe, because Hunter Green doesn't have great extension, right?
Yeah, he's about average. Actually used to be a little bit lower, like he used to be like 6.2, it's at 6.45 or so.
Hunter Green could be kind of like, I mean, because you have to remember Hunter Green is a righty. So yeah. You're saying Peyton Tolley doesn't throw 99. Well, he kind of does. And
because of the extension, right?
And if he sits lower than Hunter Green, he's a lefty. So he gets a little bit of a bonus. So
I mean, how about
maybe Hunter Green's my comp?
How about lower arm angle version James Paxton? I don't know. That's like, I'm just trying to figure this out of who has been the hard throwing lefties who have really relied on that heater.
I really wish I could have his.
I know. I don't think it's good. I'm going to tell you right now, just from watching him for ages and knowing that he's not going to get a ton of whiffs on it. It's not going to be.
Which one is that?
James Paxton.
Oh yeah.
because that's why he needed the cutter and the really the slider or whatever you want to call that thing, and the curveball and the changeup and stuff.
I think Crochet is an interesting comp. Yeah, Crochet is a good one. It's fastball cutter, but Crochet's cutter is better. So if Tolley can kind of harness the cutter.
It does seem like, you know, one of those easy cases of, and I say this all the time, when you have that kind of elite extension, baseball should be easier for you, where you don't need to do as much. You don't need the massive movement to get misses. You just need to get slight adjustments of movement, right? Yeah. So it means that instead of drastic turns of the ball to get different seams, or just shift it a little here and there, turn it slightly to the right so that the cutter is not directly over both of the seams of the C, right? Just slightly less or more, right? Or then you just go two-seamer grip, you know? Right. So
Crochet has good extension, has a really good cutter, has a really good fastball, has a similar arm angle.
Like, and it was new too. It came over time. The cutter was a new thing. Remember when he first started in 2024, it was fastball slider. And then the cutter showed up during the bad starts. I was like, haha.
It's funny. I'm looking at the changeup scattershot map for Peyton Tolley. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, he yanked a bunch of changeups. That doesn't look like good at all. But it's funny, when I was watching the game, I just watched the good ones. And I was like, changeups is awesome. You know, now I'm looking at that scatter map and I'm like, wow, he really, some of those changeups were not good. Like one changeup looks like he might hit a guy in the head with it.
I feel like stuffism is the cult where they only show you the propaganda.
Yeah, right. It's like you only see pitching ninja clips and you're like, oh my God.
The
best pitcher ever.
Books of there needs to be like a pitching like tiger karate or something like that. The kids version that's like just not as good. That is just all the bad versions of the elite pitches.
Oh yeah, here's
every totally first like
throwing a change up like, okay, at the lefty's head. Castle
special, but it's like first straight back.
Pitching doofus.
Yeah, there you go. Oh my God. But yeah, so Peyton Tolley, and it's really nice that Peyton Tolley has Garrett Crochet right there. Hey buddy, you want to learn a cutter? This is what I do with it. But then also just focusing on Connolly for next year, even regardless of Tolley, is this someone that you're like, oh okay, no, this is a better version of a lot of those southpaws who have had success so far?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny, the David Peterson comp. I've did spend a fair amount of time running away from David Peterson.
It's like, Eno, please, Eno.
I think mostly because I just trusted my model. My model didn't like him, but you know, as a lefty, he's been good. And like I said, if you gave David Peterson three ticks, I would be much more interested. So. One thing that I don't like about both of them is Fenway. I'm not a big fan of Fenway.
Sure.
And I wonder how that's going to, you know, we had a batch of young starting pitching in Boston that we were excited about. We talked about them so many times on the show, and it didn't work out that well.
Oh, you're talking about like Hauk and Cutter Crawford? Is that what you mean? Yeah, okay. Yeah. And Bayo. I mean, there's a different mold of those kind of guys. Hauk was a sinker slider guy, had a splitter for a moment, that fell off. Cutter Crawford.
I'm just saying, like, the commonality there is that, you know, when they made mistakes, they got bashed in. And, like,
sure.
We know that Cutter Crawford has a home ERA that's like 2 runs higher than his road ERA.
Yeah, that's true. The only counterpoint I can really provide with that is there were concerns about Crochet going into Fenway at the beginning of this year. And the thought that I always have about a park like that, like also in Cincinnati, is those parks hurt the above average guys.
Right. But
can help the... I mean, like
Fenway, or just like the elite guys can just shove through it.
Somehow. Right. And especially Fenway, because it prevents home runs. It creates more doubles, but the home runs are what are going to hurt the elite guys because it's just a lot. It's just a massive ERA in a second and cool. They'll allow a double and get out of it. Right. So that's kind of what I felt okay about with Crochet. And I'm not saying that Toley and Early are that. Though if they do come into what they're doing, it might be okay if that's the case. But yeah, it's a really good point, especially like, okay, we get excited about young guys all the time from like a very small sample, and it's very questionable for next year in that way. So very curious to see how that goes. We got to move on to other guys instead of the Red Sox. I'm so sorry. I spent a long time on those two, but I think they're just two of the most exciting ones right now, and I'm happy to get your takes on that. But we're going to talk about a lot of other youngsters because Eno has a whole scroll filled of comps.
Got a couple more.
We're going to get to those after this break. All right, Eno, hit me with the proudest one that you have remaining. Be like, oh, boom, that's it.
So stupid. It is so stupid, but it's almost perfect.
Okay, almost. All right. Okay.
Luis Morales.
Ooh. Yeah.
To Luis Severino.
Mm.
Luis Morales, 38 degree arm angle with a pretty good four seam that gets surprising ride off of that 38 degree arm angle. A changeup that looks like a power sinker and a sweeper. Luis Severino, a 40 degree arm angle with a four seamer that gets surprising ride. He actually throws a sinker. His changeup is not as good as Luis Morales's, but in fact, if you look at Luis Morales's changeup movement profile, it's very close to Luis Severino's sinker. and Luis Severino has added the sweeper. Both of them have stuff numbers that are a little bit over the skis of their ERAs. And they both pitch in the same park. You know, and early Severino had more stuff like Morales. I think Morales has a little bit less command than early Severino.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But you know, Severino 6.3-foot extension, Luis Morales 6.1. You know, good fastball velo. I mean, I think there's a lot to this comp. I mean, there's
you know
there's,
what? Okay, this is you're gonna laugh here. You got the wrong Luis. It's Luis Gil. Okay. You're talking about four seamer,
it's
slider,
a really sideways power
and
power,
change up.
Yeah,
with power change a up. Good height adjusted VAA, 1.2 for Heel, 1.4 for Morales. A little bit more extension for Heel at 6.8. Same IVB, right at like 15 to 16 on that one. It's about 60,
more of a sweeper for Morales and more of a gyro for
Heel is exactly right. But I would say.
That is not a bad camp. You know why it's not a bad comp too? I was watching Luis Morales, and what's so interesting for me is the fastball is his only vertical pitch. You know, he's really up. He can pitch up in the zone with the fastball, and then he's like two pitchers. It's almost like I don't think he does the two arm slot thing, but it's almost like he's an over the top fastball guy and a sinker sweeper guy underneath because. Mm. It's kind of amazing how he's just up in the zone with four seamers and then pitches side to side with the sweeper and the changeup. And I wonder if that makes him easier to stand the box against.
Well, right. Like, I mean, that's the problem with Pivetta, right? We've said he's
over the top with his fastball and his curveball, and then the sweeper is the only thing that goes sideways.
Right, and then for right-handers, they wouldn't get the curveball. They would get the sweeper. Yeah. So they would actually be able to key it in a little bit.
Yeah, they'd be like, if it's vertical, it's the four-seam, and if it's, So I wonder if a cutter would do him well. I mean,
you're speaking my language, Eno.
Luis Morales throws a gyro, but the gyro blends with the sweeper. It's kind of one big group. I would take that slider away from him, actually. Mm. I would say the sweeper is good. Let's throw a cutter so that you can play the four-seam cutter off each other and play the sweeper change off each other. One thing that really stood out for me when I talked to Trevor Rogers, I think I brought that up here, was just that he said, when people spit on my change, I can throw the sweeper.
Yeah, right.
And so then maybe there could be something there for Luis Morales where if he has two pairings that are more vertical, four-seam cutter, and then two pairings that are sideways and the sweeper and change, maybe you can play those off each other.
And just to clarify with the Rogers thing, it was that he'd be throwing this away to right-handers. So if they spat at it, that would be kind of thinking it's going to land off the plate away. So then the sweeper...
Well, he said the Houston Astros were spitting on the changeup.
Right.
Because they were spitting on everything down. They were just like, if it's down, it's a changeup. And so he threw the sweeper back door, basically, because it didn't go down as much. It stayed on plane. And so they would see it as being down and spit on it, and he'd get called strikes on it.
Right. Nice. And Morales, by the way, 20 to 21 inches of horizontal bend on that sweeper, which is... That's pretty incredible. That's 90.
It is. It's another weird pitch plot map, because the four seam seems a little bit more expected given his arm angle. But he doesn't have, it's a 38 degree arm angle. So he doesn't quite have, the Schmitz and Warrens, and not Warrens a little bit higher, but like the Schmitz and McLeans and stuff, that a lot of them are like 31 to 33 McKing, sure.
Yeah.
And so those are when you get down to 31 and 33 degree arm angle, that's when you really get big sweepers. So he gets like a 30, he gets the sweeper angle of like a 33 degree arm angle. This is what I'm talking about. He has the four seam of a 40 degree arm angle. So it's, I think it has a lot of opportunity here. And I don't, in like keeper leagues, like, are you going to wait till he makes it to Vegas to get to like a normal park? Like, how much do I want to bet on him next year? Not very much, because that park is still a funhouse mirror. Mm-hmm. But if the price is low next year, I'm going to be in. So I hope he actually has a couple struggles here in Sacramento.
Okay, first of all, okay, we always want every pitcher to be dope.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's
just
right.
Just so we're clear. All right.
That was just being selfish.
Okay, never Trevor. Fine, that aside. Yeah, no, I say that often. I'm just like, hey, it'd be kind of nice if you did really bad. Like, Cade Cavalli was bad against the Yankees, right? It helped us out, because then we were able to get him against the Marlins.
Do you think Luis Morales will be in your top? Yeah, we did the Cade Cavalli. That was funny. But do you think that Luis Morales will be in your top 75 next year?
There are so many. Once again, I'm going to say no. And the reason for that is I don't trust the command. I try as much as I can. I know it sounds weird, but I really try to remove all of the command questionable high stuff guys. Like the young ones who were like, well, it could click into place, but we don't know if it will or not. And you're like, Nick, isn't that your whole thing? Like, you take all these high upside guys, you don't really care about the floor. I'm like, no, I want to take the ones that have a much more believable and digestible floor, while I think there's going to be more, right? And I see someone like Morales, and honestly, what you're talking about the four-seamer being looking like it's a higher arm angle pitch, and then you have the sweeper, that kind of speaks to the questionable command that he has. Hmm. So that thrown in is with Sacramento.
Yeah, does that get affect Tolley too? Because Tolley has a surprising move given his arm angle.
But Tolley throws strikes with a four-seamer. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, that will be there. And I will imagine, just like it kind of was with Crochet, like, something's going to be there in the offseason or just over time of, you will find the thing that you pair with that and you're good, right? It's kind of why I like, I'm actually trying as hard as I can to be like, how do I find the Eovaldi, right? How do I find that guy? Because, yeah, sometimes it's like, all right, I'm not going to go and chase...
But I don't think you want to find him too early. Remember, Eovaldi's first 3 years in the league were not good.
This year, he was at 60. He was at ADP 200,
Right, right. But he was a veteran. He's a veteran.
That, well, that's what I'm getting at, though. It's like, I want to try, like, Merrill Kelly and Eovaldi and Ranger Suarez this year are the takeaways for me of just, man, I know I say don't draft Tobies and everything, but those are ones that were identifiable. Matthew Boyd, at least, I was like, hey, Matthew Boyd, I want. Fine, got that. But those other guys were right there, too. And I think about that where, okay, instead I was trying to chase, like, maybe Dustin May doing his thing, or expecting Lucas Giolito to be back in, like, a week or two when it took longer than that, or around those 50s, 60s of SPs, I'm trying to see, like, which one is a Toby? And which one's actually like, no, this is six innings all the time, winning ball club, good situation. Like, you will be going until it stops kind of guy. And that kind of speaks to Cameron Early for me a bit. So there is, I kind of want both of them because I feel like Peyton Tolley is not going to be this command questionable as Morales is. I really feel like it's a very simple thing he needs to do relatively. So I'm on both of those, but Morales to me is more of that flyer they'll be like kind of interested in. But even if he does well in a start, I won't be able to tell you that he can do it again, right? That's a difficulty that I have, is I'm going to have that indecision still by the end of April in all likelihood for Luis Morales.
Probably why Heel is a good comp too, because, you know, as good as Heel was last year, you know, with the command not being there this year, he's been, you know, pretty tough to figure out.
He's going to get better. He's going to get better. Yeah, exactly. That's a hipster headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster, right?
Yeah.
I did want to talk about I really want to make sure we get to the Mets guys. Okay. So Brandon Sproat, who, by the way, I think I'm very proud of, Sproth the Raven forevermore was his roundup title. All right. And only for this season, because I personally am out on Sproat for next year, but much more in on Jonah Tong and Nolan McLean. Do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's an archetype here, and, you know, that was another way that I pitched the show to you today, was like, let's talk about pitcher archetypes. And, you know, the archetype here is the one that I mentioned in terms of Will Warren and Michael King, and you know, I made a chart where you just have King, Warren, and McLean on the same chart. You know, with their arm angles and their movement stuff. And it's remarkable how similar they are. I mean, they are all 26. Will Warren's 27. Michael King's 27. They're all 26 to 27 degree arm angles. They all have that, like, surprising amount of four-seam movement, a more sinker-sweeper core. There's little differences where McLean has a cutter, a little bit like Clark Schmidt. And so maybe I should have put Clark Schmidt on this too, because Clark Schmidt is cutter curve. They all have really good sweepers, but McLean has a better four seam. So McLean, I think, may have the most upside. The problem is that there are factors that don't show up on this, like Michael King's command.
Yes,
separates him from Will Warren and Clark Schmidt and Nolan McLean. Nolan McLean's velocity separates him from Will Warren and Clark Schmidt and Michael King, you know? So, you know, I do think that there's an archetype here, which is a sinker sweeper guy, where you've got a fastball, whether it be the four seam or the cutter, that you've brought up out of that sinker mix, you know, that looks different, and plays well to opposite hands. That's the way we've made the sinker slider, guys of yore. That's the new thing that we've done in today's age, is to figure out how to make those guys doable against lefties. Now, if you have watched Nolan McLean, you know that he still is iffy against lefties.
Yeah. And that is his biggest weakness. He's trying to make the four seamer work with it. It's not quite there with it. I mean, I would say that's one of his weaker elements. It is better velocity, but it's not
the command.
It's kind of dead zone-y, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, if he plays out the sinker, so maybe he should throw more sinkers to lefties.
Maybe.
So that the four seamer looks like better to them.
Yeah. Michael King does this, but he's able
to
just go, front hip sinker. So,
yeah. And McLean doesn't quite have that command.
Right.
You wonder, each of these guys, to be honest, other than Michael King, has struggled with lefties at some point. We saw Will Warren do the Nolan McLean where he was like, we made this joke when we made the video where we watched Will Warren go up against Luis Castillo. And I was saying the plan is to walk the lefties. And in that, I think maybe in that one that we saw, instead of walking the lefties, he threw junk in the zone. He threw a bunch of breaking balls in the zone.
Changeup is better in that one too.
Yeah, his changeup was good in that start. So that's Will Warren's way out. I don't know if that's McClain's way out. I think he has to stuff his way out. And what he's trying to do is backdoor the curveball to get lefties out. He's doing a lot of like, you know, hope they take it and backdoor the curveball. Right. He does have pretty good command of that curveball. It's a that nasty curveball. There's a little bit of like a Seth Lugo, like a low slot Seth Lugo situation where the curveball is so good that I have real hope that he can figure it out, because it's
kind of like Charlie Morton too in that way.
It's just an elite pitch. Yeah, it's an elite pitch.
Right. And he definitely went back foot with that under the nitro zone to lefties for strikeouts, especially in that debut for Nolan McClain. Now, would you want him or Jonah Tong for next year? Completely different archetype. Tong with the extreme other side, four seamer over the top, and then a Vulcan change. You know,
he's the easiest comp in the world.
Kevin Gausman, Tim Lincecum, of course, but you know,
Tim Lincecum.
But modern day, it's trying to be Kevin Gausman, I would say. Right. Yeah. Like that's the closest, maybe. I mean, better Casey Mize.
That's interesting because Stuffles does not like Tong's breaking ball much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was pretty much like 85% fastball changeup. I'm going to save the mini rant, but I don't understand how a pitcher has a Vulcan changeup. Like, how do they fail so much with a normal splitter that they say, I can't do this with my index finger and middle finger, but I can do it with my middle finger and my ring finger. I do not understand it. For whatever reason, that works.
Kyle Loesch.
Awesome. I actually got Bill Pito to do that on MSG as I was trying to tell him with Chris Paddock, and he just couldn't do the Vulcan wave or whatever it is. I was like, okay, all right, well, it's just not so bad. And yeah, he can't put a ball in there. No one can do that. Why would you try and force that for 5 years to be able to throw this pitch? I don't know. But Jonah Tong does, and guess what? It's kind of inconsistent.
There are some like circle and splitter guys that are actually secret Vulcans. Mm-hmm. What Dan Straley found out was he thought he was like an aggressive circle, but when he looked at the edger, it was coming out of these two fingers. So
that's fine. He's secret in the middle and ring.
There's some secret Vulcans in there. I mean, this is interesting. What I feel when I watch both of those guys is I feel like I'm on the precipice. I feel nervousness for them. Mm. I feel nervous. I feel nervous for Tong's health. I feel nervous for McClain's approach against lefties. Tong has one of the most biggest head whacks of all time. Like him and Matt Brash are yanking their heads off to the side. That Tom House is upset somewhere about this. So,
right.
You know, it looks bad for your back. It was bad for Tim Lincecum's hips and back. You know, he had a lot of struggle with that. I'm nervous from McClain's approach against lefties, but it's a tantalizing nervousness because I'm just like, these guys could be great.
Yeah.
I need to have some shares of them. I think I lean McClain. There's something about his demeanor on the mound, even his post-game interviews. I just feel like he's going to figure his way out of this. Maybe it's just, you know, throwing a ton of curveballs to lefties. Maybe that's his way out. But I feel like in there are theoretical ways out, and he's going to figure them out. With Tong, it has to be a two-pitch dominant situation.
Yeah.
There's nothing for him to figure out. It's just he's just got to dominate with the fastball up. It's the Blake Snell blueprint, or you know, with the Gausman change. You know, that's all he's got, and it's either work or it's either going to work or it's not.
I mean, it's Kevin Gausman. Really, it's just like to a T. It's just you're going to do this, and like let's go. And you guys know me. I hate it.
It makes you itch.
Feel sustainable. You know, even if you go 3 or 4, you'll have those runs with it. And then it won't. And honestly, the cobbler was like this. That's Matt Shoemaker, guys. Okay. Oh, you remember Matt Shoemaker for like a month would be
five four seamers and then these crazy splitters off of it.
Yeah. And then it would just be like, okay, split. I got my splitter working for like four starts.
On how Frankie many Montas times did I think like Matt Shoemaker had figured it out and then he hadn't?
Right. Frankie Montas as well, when his splitter was going in 2019 or 2000.
These are a lot of over the top guys too, you know?
Right. So
with that, small arsenals.
Who is the most successful two pitch guy with a splitter that you can think of?
Gossman. It's always Gossman. Or right. I mean, Lincecum. I mean, Lincecum, even Lincecum had other pitchers, I guess.
It's only been Gossman who's really been able to do that. If you want to say Kodai Senga, no, because the cutter was a massive stabilizer for him. Tanaka, no, the slider was the golden pitch.
Yeah, he threw a gyro slider. Yeah.
And that thing was his strike stealer and everything. Kenta Maeda the same way. You have now Yamamoto, but no, the curve is massive there.
And I've always been...
Nope, lefty, sorry, righties get sliders.
I've always been suspicious of righties lefty. Without a slider.
Right. So, yeah, that's a really good point, too. And especially if you're over the top like that, it's like, this should be right there. To just fall off the side for a cutter or gyro or that kind of thing. Like that's surprised the arm angle for it.
Didn't come up with one. He must have tried it.
Or yeah, right. Or a 12-6 curve or something. But I mean, he has things that exist there, but they're just not really polished at the moment.
I don't think the curve would solve it. You what you want is a hard pitch you can throw for strikes when you need a
right,
strike.
You don't want it to be the curve. Want to throw the force. Absolutely. It's kind of why Glasnow didn't want the splitter. He needed the slider, right? Yeah. Because he needed a strike pitch.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. Curve in the
I think Tong will have like a good strikeout rate next year, I believe, but I wouldn't be surprised if he also has a high walk rate.
Yeah.
And he's kind of who's like that who strikes out, you know, like maybe he has a cease like existence. I know it's not the same kind of situation, but it's two pitch guy. Maybe he has like a great season, and then the next year when everyone buys in, he has a bad season. You know what I mean? Like he could
Aaron Nola. You could even say kind of that Hunter Green aspect because he wasn't good with the slider for strikes for a while, and then all of a sudden that clicked in. That's a good. I love that idea. I will also say about McLean is that he's young to pitching. This is a
position player, right?
Right. This is a very malleable thing that's going on for him. And Tong is like, okay, well, there's not much. There's a lot of rigidity here. Not much more you can really expect with it. I think also with Sproat, yeah, there will be some things here, but I think I'm with you here that McLean seems much more capable of developing into something more than what we're seeing now. And by the way, what we're seeing now is great. He's having this ridiculous, you know, month or so. Like it's not that we think he's bad now. We just think it's not sustainable where it is right now, and hopefully improve in the future. We do have a few others, and mostly it's, what do you know, lefties with a changeup. And we're going to talk about those guys after this break. So before actually I get to those guys with changeups, there was one that I gave you some extra time, kind of like when I was at Berkeley Carroll, all my friends got extra time for tests and I didn't. And I should have, because I do have ADHD. I just wasn't tested for it. But I gave you some and you did it for Cam. Who did you come up with finally for Cam Schlittler?
Well, this was using my arm slot as the beginning type of comps. And so I didn't find a perfect one, but Cam Schlittler is a 40. The way I would describe him, if you're looking for comps, and maybe this will help us jog other comps, but the way I describe him is a 42 degree arm angle with a mostly dead zone, but high velocity fastball and a nascent two seamer that shows promise, but hasn't really been what it can be. Otherwise, two great breaking balls that he can play off those, that he has pretty good command.
I got one, but I want to know what yours is first.
Well, based on the arm slot, I came up with Jackson Job.
That's interesting.
So they have the same arm slot. They have similar sort of cutter gyro slider plus curveball combo. Jackson Job has a changeup that Cam Schlittler doesn't have. Jackson Job has also successfully separated a sinker off of that four seam.
I would think that the stuff of his like splitter, sorry, this is a slider and his cutter and his curve for Jackson Job just got us more excited, I think, than with Cam's. Also, I think Cam has more extension because that was actually, it's a problem for Jackson Job. It's 6 feet. as opposed to the near seven of Cam Schlittler.
I know Cam Schlittler here says 6.4.
6.4? No, no, don't you think
Vaughn says so?
Oh, no.
I mean, I think it's I am excited about Cam Schlittler, and
I'm wrong. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a great one with Jackson Jobe.
And he's shown way more ability to strike guys out than, so he doesn't have the problem of Jobe where it's like great stuff numbers, but not great major league strikeout rate. So it's not a perfect comp. Another one that got close was, I mean, it was by arm slot, Brandon Woodruff, but it's not the same. It's not the same guy. I mean, Brandon Woodruff is kind of a pronator that has a good changeup. So that's not Cam Schlittler. So right. I don't really know. This is one where I just want to say, hey, a lot of promise. There's some, I think, collapse potential where, like, let's say if he comes in next year, he's more 96, and he hasn't developed that sinker, then I think people will hit that four seam better. But he has such a great tracker with strikeout rates, and he brought that with him to the major leagues, and he has two good breaking balls. I guess I'm mostly just in on him, even if I can't find the perfect comp.
All right. So I'm very much in on Cam, by the way. I think what he brings to the table, the fastball is a phenomenal foundation. And the fact that now that he's better with what he does, which is the cutter and the curve, and now adding the sinker, which I think will help. I think all of that is just that works, and he will be a staple in that Yankee rotation. Good winning team. That's what you want. My comp, I'm going to even say it's closer. Maybe at times this year, but this pitcher has a changeup, which is questionable, but does have four-seamer, I believe now cutter and curve, and pitches in the same park as I do rabbit ears, or air quotes, the same park. He's in the same division. He's in Tampa Bay. His name is Shane Baz.
That's your comp for Cam Schlittler.
Yeah, because he's throwing. Okay, Shane Baz is actually 97-98, same part, because it's Jordan Steinbrenner's, the same dimensions. Haha, I got him. Okay, but it's a big curveball, and he is throwing a cutter now, and it's not. It's weird because I don't like Shane Baz's fastball as much, and I feel that it's a little tighter with what Schlittler does, but it does play out in my head of. The curve is really good for Baz, and it can be very good for Cam. The cutter is now
the pitch plot. The pitch plot things are pretty similar.
Oh.
Although Baz has a 37 degree arm angle, though.
So. And what is Cam's?
42.
Okay,
I mean it's close.
That's the different approach of comp I got for you.
Yeah, I like it.
That's what I bring to the table with my very long extra time.
Post surgery Strider is right there with Cam.
Oh. Post-surgery Strider. Oh, man.
So these comps are not very exciting, though. We're excited about the player, but these comps are very exciting. I would say don't worry about the comps so much in this situation.
Well, like, I would say this, though. Post-surgery Strider's fine because Strider post-surgery is 96, and the problem with him is he's not at 97.
That's what I'm saying. What if Cam's 96 next year? I mean, there's no real reason he should be, though. I mean,
I thought he would be after his debut. 24. And then he just kept doing 97.8 like every single start. So it might be that way, but even if he's 97 and not flirting with 98 each time, that's still fine. I wouldn't think that Cam would be down a full tick and a half or so next year. That doesn't sit quite right with me unless you think there would be some injury or so, because if he's doing this consistently, with the volume he's had this
year. Yeah, 50 innings in the majors, keeping it up. Yeah, you're right. It's I just wanted to point out that his fastballs, you know, it gets most of its value from velocity.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if it does dip, then Cam is not nearly as interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to make good on my promise, everyone. We're going to talk about some lefties with changeups. There's Ian Seymour in there. There's Andrew Alvarez, who's an interesting one because he doesn't have a changeup. It's like two breakers that get extra drop than you'd expect. And then you also have Joey Cantillo as well. Do you have any interest? Let's just get this one out of the way. Andrew Alvarez, the sober man, because I'm so sorry. Do you have any interest in him? He does get Pittsburgh, actually, in his next start.
What is it? Did Andrew Alvarez face the A's?
Cubs. He faced the Cubs in his last game. First one was, I believe, against the Marlins in his debut.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just looking for swinging strikes on the four-seam fastball. Andrew Alvarez has
two.
Yeah. One by Savant. You have some sort of foul tip in here that you count. You might get.
Oh, is it actually two? Did I?
I mean, no. I have. I'm looking at one on Savant.
Oh yeah, okay. I was just guessing two.
Carson really Kelly swung and missed at it once, and then later in the same game, Carson Kelly homered off of it.
go big or go home, guys. Come on.
It's not good. It's not good. There's some similarities to Kate Bovich's mix, but everything's just a little bit worse.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't seem like one you really want to go for. Kate Bovich has more going as well. And Alvarez, I mean, against Pittsburgh, maybe it works, but I don't really want to go for that.
You put the arm angle in his profile on Savant, and everything's just straight off of it.
Yeah.
It's a peanut.
It's a peanut. I'm just imagining all of them with a monocle.
I have some other bad comps that are sad. Yoandris Gomez.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to go through arm angle and all this stuff. And then I was like, you know what? He's just got a bunch of pitches, you know, that he's not really in charge of. And Osvaldo Bido.
Oh, come on, Eno.
Slider's his best pitch.
Eno.
Four seems okay. Got no command. And then I think it ended up that their arm angles are not that off. Yeah, Osvaldo Bido is 35 and Yoandris Gomez is 34. Now, Yoandris Gomez has more pitches, but if he has just as bad command, I don't see why we'd need to be interested.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a flat attack angle, 1.3. He has about 7 feet of extension. 94 on the fastball, but we saw 95 earlier on, but then it fell down to 93.
Yeah, Beto doesn't have extension.
He has a sinker he plays off of it too, which is something you always want to see with a four seamer. Essentially, with 7 feet of extension, it's like, great, cool. Now you have two fastballs now, right?
But you can't talk yourself into this guy with the. He had a 40-40 present-future command grade from Fangraphs. Last year he had a 13% walk rate and this year has a 12% walk rate.
Yeah. I'm not buying it. Don't worry.
Okay.
I'm just, I can squint and see it. I mean, kind of like Johan Oviedo though. Johan Oviedo more so because he has elite flat and elite extension. Like we're talking 7.5 extension, 1.9 flat, right? So
and
that
Oviedo
just,
has,
please get that upstairs. Command. Please get the slider working down and that can work.
Oviedo has poor command and
right.
Yet. Has a 4.2 ERA for his career, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But going back to Joey Cantillo and Ian Seymour, the last two I wanted to bring up here, moving over past Mason Barnett. I know he had 18 whiffs, but like, there's no way. That was weird.
Oh, wait, I have a comp for him.
Okay, what do you got?
Jansen Junk. They're both extreme over the top guys.
Throw the barn at you. Yeah.
Yeah, they throw the barn at you. And Junk has better command. Neither has good extension. I don't know. I've been not that complimentary of Junk. So
yeah, he's a junk baller when he's on. He does have a four seamer that does have a good amount of vert, can be effective upstairs, but it's not really the thing that you want to be reliant on. Cantillo is a very unique one to me because he has a 7.5 extension with like a 91. It was actually 92, 93 yesterday, but really you would normally say 91, 92. And not the greatest command it was on yesterday. I don't know if there's a really good comp there, but I'm curious what you found.
You know, in my Tyler Anderson, Mitch Ferris thing, I forgot that Tyler Anderson's over the top. So Tyler Anderson,
Cantillo, 54 degrees.
Yeah, Tyler Anderson's 55. Tyler Anderson's 89 on the four seam, 79 on the change. Cantillo is 91 on the four seam, 78 on the change. So I think there's some commonalities here, except that Cantillo doesn't really have a cutter. Tyler Anderson has nothing that's below the zero line in terms of movement.
Mm.
So Cantillo has that curveball that does separate him a little bit. But even if you know, Tyler Anson also has zero extension, like
really yeah, 6 feet versus 7.5.
Yeah, so
a big gap there.
I think Cantillo has more upside than Tyler Anson. He throws 91.5, and he has thrown as much as like 93, I think, in the past.
Right. But yeah, just yesterday he did essentially.
Yeah, so I like him some, but I mean the big one for me, and this is where the comps fall apart is, Cantillo has very inconsistent command.
Yeah. And
I'm really surprised when I see the 103 location plus for this year.
I'll tell you why. I know exactly why. Because the changeup, while missing, is missing in the zone and is still effective. So, especially for us, we're like, that's still going to be really effective, right? Yeah. It doesn't need to be right at the bottom of the zone for that changeup. It just needs
it's not
to-
a lot of waste pitches. It's just a fair amount of middle. Like the four seam, the biggest red part of the four seam is middle down a little bit.
Yeah, that's not what you want.
The curveball.
Maybe it works in the Logan Webb way of just, hey, the changeup exists, so I'm going to be passive on this. More than
I'd like him normal. A little bit. I think he'll make my top 100 at least.
He will for me, just because I can see this being. It's Cleveland as well, and I think Tito going to get another lollipop and a popsicle in the middle of the game, and then having over 100 pitches for his guy has now carried over to the next manager. Right, that's just what Cleveland does. You see Logan Allen go over 90 pitches every time now, right? So we just saw Cantillo go eight innings yesterday. They do that. They push their guys longer, which is great. It's really hard to find a consistent six inning guy these days. And when you have one who has whiff ability and a really good changeup, that's really appealing to me. So I'm certainly going to have him like the top of my Toby rankings, right? Which is like usually around like the 70s, 80s or so, likely for next year. So I'll have him above Luis Morales, for example. Cantillo.
Oh God, I have a pretty interesting comp for Ian Seymour. It's making me wonder if I have underappreciated Ian Seymour. 46 degree arm angles for both of these guys. Mm-hmm. They both throw six pitches. They both have 30 to 50th percentile extension. Mm-hmm. I will say that the veteran throws five pitches, and Seymour is five, I guess. Yeah, so maybe it's five pitches each.
Is he a right-hander or a left-hander? This veteran?
Both are left-handers. They both throw the cutters are almost identical. The other player's four-seamer actually has less separation off the cutter. But the other player's sinker is better than Seymour's. And the other player's curveball is better than Seymour's.
Two guesses. Ranger Suarez?
Nope.
Eduardo Rodriguez. No, I can't.
Max Fried.
Oh, Max Fried?
Yeah. Now, now that I'm seeing this though, Max Fried's curveball is really important.
That is such a big aspect of his game. And it, the changeup hasn't
it separates
really
everything, you know? And Seymour doesn't have anything down there except for the sweeper, I guess.
Right. I still kind of think of Seymour as leaning a lot on that changeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's working, which is good. And it's really going back to the whole thing we talk about.
With Fried also sits 96 and Seymour.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. You know, it's like, hey, check. That's good. I thought you might even be going like Merrill Kelly for a second, but Merrill Kelly lives down much more.
Yeah, I said two lefties though.
Yeah, you said two lefties. That's why I was like, okay, never mind. Ian Seymour.
Who are you going to have the highest out of everybody?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, I interrupted.
I was going to say this. Like, are you going to be interested in Ian Seymour next year? I don't think that I am. I would have Cantillo ahead of him.
I might have him and Cantillo in a similar spot, but there's some tiering going on here. I mean, I think I'm going to have Peyton Tolley at the top.
Yeah, it's going to be Tolley, Early, and McLean.
Tolley and McLean near the top. I think there'll be a secondary one. With for me the sort of stuffest tier with a lot of questions, which will be the Luis Morales, Jonah Tong tier.
Mm-hmm. And where's Cam in this, by the way?
I think Cam's in that early tier. I think my three favorite are Cam, Nolan, and Tony.
Yeah.
And then there'll be the ones with questions. I think I might have a group there. I think Cantillo makes it into the questions that I like. Early, it doesn't fit exactly. It's not as stuff is, but I think, you know, I'll put him in that tier. And then there's the next tier, which is guys I'll take if they're super cheap. I mean, if CNC Moore drops to me, there's a bunch of leagues where, like, in a draft and hold, like, you just need to have an arm and you need to make sure he's going to pitch in the major leagues. And I think Ian Seymour is that. And I think he has some upside, so I will take him, but whether I target him. So I think basically McClain and Toley and them, they can be top 40, 50 maybe, you know?
Yeah.
The next group is going to be top 75, so back end of the top 75. So, like, your final pitcher, you know, can be a Tong or so. And then you have to get to deep league, I think, to get Seymour.
So, what's really funny is if you go to First Pitch Arizona, guys, which you should, I'm going to be doing a On the Corner podcast with Eric Samolsky, where everybody's going to come up to Mike and be able to look at our rankings, Eric and mine, and tell us why we're wrong. Mm-hmm. And when you're going to look at that, here we are saying, like, yeah, I think these guys will be top 50. And then we forget. There are so many good pitchers that are
hurt.
And like we're saying, it's like 50, then 7,500. No, it's probably going to be 75, then 100, then like 200 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
But at the same time, I love saying that because that means once again, I'm likely going to be out on whatever people consider the top 10, top 15, just because just look at how much, like how many of those are surviving the full year. Mm-hmm. And it's just a worse return on investment, I guess, with hitters. Hitters are just more consistent and stay healthier.
I just generally try. What I've been having some success with is a late top 15 and an early second.
Yes.
Guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I sometimes don't wait as long as you, but I'm in some of these leagues where in a draft and hold, you have to buy innings and
That's
wait too long.
Kind of yeah.
Yeah. If you wait too long in those kind of leagues, then you lose innings. That's who drops is, oh, he could be good. Is he hurt? Is he healthy? You know,
that's where
you start to lose innings. So you need to kind of get, that's why I had a lot of like sort of, I had Logan Webb builds. My favorite build this year was Crochet, DeGrom, and Webb, which was a lot of early investment. But Crochet was actually, I think I got him as one of the later number ones. And I just went hard in the number two thing.
At one point, we have to have a conversation about DeGrom. Just like, not today, but just, you know, I remember making suggestions about, hey, I think he's going to go over 100 innings. And we're going to go, you know, and it's like, well, hold on. I'm not saying that this wasn't an exceptional year, but we should at least be open to what are injuries and what are the variabilities of those.
No, I think that's it's worth thinking about, but I think the pendulum can go too far based on, you know, a couple of anecdotal things where you're like, oh, DeGrom did this. So
exactly.
You know, we don't like the way I'd say it is there is still some signal in injury projection. You know, it may feel like that's not a lot. And yes, there is enough noise where my partner at Rates and Barrels, Derek Van Riper, he makes a lot of builds and has a lot of teams where he just leans into the risk and he just gets a bunch. And what happens with him is sometimes it's awesome and he wins the league.
Right. And sometimes it's just,
which is sort of what happened with my Crochet DeGrom. I'm right now top five in all of TGFBI with that build.
Oh, that's the one. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So because they all hit, I mean,
right.
It's kind of a fun overall build. It's like, it's a build where you can like, oh, maybe I'll just be the best team out of like 500, you know?
Right.
But there was definitely some crash potential there. The one thing that I thought that I was doing smart was saying, well, I got Logan Webb. So, you know, all I need is for one of Crochet and DeGrom to work out and then plus Logan Webb and I'll have a pretty good rotation.
Right. So the conversation I want to have about the injury thing is not about, okay, DeGrom happened, so now we should apply that to everyone.
Right.
It's more about the binary thinking about it that needs to be hold on a little bit molded better.
I think so too. I didn't have DeGrom on a target list.
Right.
You know, I didn't have DeGrom on a target list. This league, I think he fell to like the fourth or something. So I was just like,
Fine. All right.
That's too far. Exactly. So that's what you're right. That's what you're thinking. It's like, it should not be as much like about,
he's going to do this.
Yes or no.
Yeah,
it should
right.
be like in these situations. Yes.
And
in
what are
this
the
type of
and,
build in this type of situation?
And even saying Logan Webb, I'm like, well, people said that about Logan Gilbert or George Kirby or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a guarantee that, like, it feels much better that Logan Webb was going to get more innings, and he did, and that's awesome. It's also, well, there is more risk in those big inning guys we talk about all the time. Like, well, he's gone 200 innings many times, so thus he's going to get injured. And then he hasn't gotten 200 innings, so thus he's going to get injured. Like, hold on a second. Which one do we want?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Everyone can get injured, right?
Everyone can get injured. So dock all pitchers a little bit. Yes, I agree with that. Dock all pitchers a little bit. But you know, there's been people who've had some success just being like, if they have any whiff of injury, I'm going to ignore the
pitcher. Well, right. And that's a thing to do too. And that can absolutely, you know, cool. I want to stay away from Strider. I want to stay away from Lucas Giolito. And sure, Lucas Giolito did have that amazing stretch in there. Strider had some moments, but it's not like it's totally fine and everything's great and it's cool.
But then if you have too many of those people in your league, those people drop, and then all of a sudden DeGrom's there in the fourth or fifth and you're like, well, yeah. I'm not going to
just... If you're in a league where you can stash IL guys, look at Brandon Woodruff right now. You know, everyone's right, like, oh, yeah. Well, that's not going to come back and be good, right? I think it's just a really interesting conversation about what risk reward is actually present.
And when those equal out, like when,
right.
how to figure that out.
A lot of our biases are directed by a handful of sample, not like hundreds, you know.
I tell you, my way out has been innings pitch projections.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing with an innings pitch projection, which I do by hand, is I'm trying to factor in the innings risk, you know, so that their ERA, their projected ERA and K percentage, that's their upside. That's like
right.
could go right, like a DeGrom, you know. So it's really hard to do, and I'm not saying that I'm great at it and that I figured it out. And it's more of an art than a science.
The hardest thing we do is volume.
But the last thing I do in my preseason ranks is I go through every innings and I will subtract three here and add five there. And it doesn't mean anything. It's just me trying to come to grips with how much injury risk I think they have.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'll look at the injury grade and I'll just be like, nah, I'm taking five innings off this. I'm taking 10 innings off this.
100%. It's essentially at every auction, you should be setting your own value for everyone, saying this is the price that I want for them. I feel like they are worth,
yeah,
you know, and you should be doing that with everyone. So if you don't like a guy, don't just exit. Say, cool, at what point is
do
this
I like good? Him? Yeah, every player has a price where you should be actually being on them.
That. And that's essentially what you're doing with the innings, is saying this
so
is
you
the
take,
inning
yeah,
that I'm cool with.
If you think DeGrom's going to be fully on injured this year, but he's going to pitch some, give him 90 innings.
Right. Give him something that you feel like is like,
he'll pop a number in your auction calculator. 90 innings of DeGrom will still give you like $10, $15 of value. You know?
Right. So that's a fun conversation for us to have. We will have more of that over the offseason, kind of talking about those injury ones, and like, maybe we can actually do a podcast where Eno gets his glasses on, brings out some notepads and paper, be like, okay, plus five innings. I wanted you to do it like the tax guy. Like, you got to put it in the thing. Ching! Okay, five innings, done.
Maybe we could get some early injury grades from Zimmerman and debate them.
Oh, that'd be so good. Be like, Jeff, you're not allowed to comment. I'm so sorry, buddy.
If he gives it to us and we talk about it, we may come up with certain aspects that he hasn't tested yet. You know, like, have you tested this? Or have you tested this? And I can tell you what he has tested, and maybe we'll come up with some things for him to look at.
Oh, that'll be fun. Also, I would hope I can convince him to just record himself, watch our episode. And then
he has a great sense of humor.
Josh Sperry, our wonderful video guy here at PitcherList, I would then like put it into the podcast or like the director. Yeah. You know? Oh, I don't know if Jeff will be up for that, but if he is, oh my gosh, we are so down.
Just have him on with us.
Yeah, right. Just like, and just, you can't say anything until we're done. Please hold it in. And we really should do that. But I think that's enough for this week. Eno, what are you working on for the end of the season? What can we expect from you?
I've got a piece coming out on IVB. I have a Slack message that I haven't read yet, so I think it'll be this week. What in it, we got Josh Kalk, the legend, to go on record and talk about it, which he said he could do because everybody knows about IVB, idiot. No, he didn't say that, but like he basically said that. So there's some really funny quotes from some legendary people. Kyle Bodie has a hilarious quote in there. So we got some really funny quotes, and we also have some explainers. And I think most of the people listening to this know what IVB is, but you know, it's still a fun little exploration. I'm going to compare the Red Sox and Yankees for Friday. I've got an interesting Rates and Barrels coming up tomorrow. There are framing runs based on who's at bat. So Wilmer Flores has had the best framing behind him of any player in the last 5 years, and it happens every year.
Why?
And so we're trying to figure out what it could be about the hitter that could increase or decrease the quality of framing behind him.
And so, is it up and down framing or
It's a thing that Tango shared that's on Savant where you can see where he's being jobbed. So in particular, Wilmer Flores is being jobbed at the top of the zone. He's getting great framing behind him at the top of the zone.
Yeah, that would make more sense to me than in and out, because that is like it's versus the plate.
There are some guys who are in and out. So I have a feeling that
over the plate, I would imagine maybe inside is framed or.
I have the feeling inside. that this is different reasons for different people.
Yeah.
But Christian Yelich and Wilmer Flores at the top of this list. And I went around yesterday at the ballpark asking everybody why, what is this? And I got some really interesting theories that I'm going to try and test tonight before my podcast.
It's got to be. Does Wilmer Flores squat? Does he like bend his knees? He's got it every time.
Christian Yelich, dude.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe they stand up. Either like one of the, they got to change something that throws off the ump. That's all I can
Yeah, maybe do. The umpire. Yeah. There is one theory that has nothing to do with the batter or the umpire.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I can't wait, guys. I'm so excited. The other thing I would say is Aaron Judge at the bottom of the zone? Is that
he did real? Not show up on this one. He's not in the extremes.
Was it like a pendulum swing back, or would it never happen? I don't know.
Matt Chapman has been getting lucky on framing at the top of the zone.
That's because of his eyes.
Okay.
All right. That's going to do it for today. I'm looking forward to also Eno's rankings at some point in the offseason. I imagine you'll do it before first pitch Arizona. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Your first round of it. I will have mine within a week of the season ending, because I need to just get that done and out of the way. And then I fully shift to doing team rotations for next year, and I have to get that all done before December when I get married. So, oh my gosh, it's going to expect a lot from me in October and November. And if Eno does have rankings before we go to First Pitch Arizona, we'll make sure to record an episode for you guys. But that is going to do it for today. On behalf of Eno Saris, this wonderful guest, thank you so much for joining. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.